Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today, my guest is going to be John Burchielli. John Burchielli, or maybe it's Burchielli. I'll find out when he picks up. And he's going to talk about Guillain-Barré syndrome, which he developed post-Tdap vaccine. So, John Burchielli, now see, I wrote Burchielli. It's John Burchielli, is a former volunteer for Senator Richard Pan, who is the man who sponsored the SB 277 monstrosity in California. And he volunteered for him for many years. And he lives in Sacramento, California. And he's going to talk about how difficult his life has become as a result of this vaccine. And now I know they give the children the DTaP, which is diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, but perhaps this is more, it's probably still, since it's Tdap, tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, but probably the tetanus is the number one component, I would presume, if they're naming it in a different order. But he'll explain that. Probably. And I'm eager to speak with him. His life has been turned upside down as a result of this. I don't know if anybody saw an interview with a nurse who developed Guillain-Barré post-flu shot. And they put her through hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of tests before, I mean, years had gone by when finally a doctor said, well, you wouldn't have gotten the flu shot, would you? And she said, yes. He goes, well, that's it. Can you imagine? And she had to get it for her job. So we'll find out what the story is here. Hello, John. Welcome.
Hi.
Would you kindly give the correct pronunciation of your last name?
Burchielli.
Burchielli. Well, that's very nice. So much nicer when you say it than when I butcher it. And I'm half Italian. I should be able to do this with my eyes closed. Okay, John Burchielli. Will you kindly tell us about your life pre- and post-Tdap vaccine?
Well, before the vaccine, I was pretty much a community activist in the areas of public health in my community. I've been involved in lots of public health projects, and that's how I was involved with Senator Richard Pan, was through the public health advocacy projects out in the community. And I did that with him for about 7 years. So over that period of time, probably close to 40 or 50 different projects. And they... were all kinds of different health-related projects. None of them had anything to do with the vaccine, by the way.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Really, I am.
Yeah, before he sold out to the university, he was very much into pushing a healthy lifestyle model versus a quick shot-in-the-arm model.
And what university is that?
University of California.
There are a lot of them. Which one?
University of California, Davis, and the specific location would be the teaching hospital in Sacramento, California.
I see. Okay. All right. So he is being funded by the University of California, and this has basically gotten him into the position he was in, or he was already in that position. So being an incumbent, he'd be the likely person by a lot to be reelected for his district. One wonders if he is assured basically being reelected, as incumbents are, why he would even consider taking a large sum of money. Period. I mean, there's only so much money you need.
Well, he wasn't the incumbent.
Oh.
No, he wasn't the incumbent. He he outspent the incumbent like 300%.
I see. What was he before
and that
then?
Baby,
and that, for him? What was he before then, if you were volunteering for him?
Oh, he, Richard Pan's primary job is he's the director of the pediatric residency program at UC Davis.
Okay, so,
so
that's
so,
the capacity
so his
that
program
you were volunteering
is to teach
for him.
Right, and so his program is to teach medical doctors to become pediatricians.
I see. Okay, and he was not, and all of these programs you were volunteering for did not involve vaccination. That's very interesting.
No, everything was health from a community model. So teaching the child and the family nutrition, healthy eating habits, healthy lifestyles, active living, all those kinds of things, and anything related to those kinds of things were what we were promoting at that time.
What a departure. That is an about face is what it is.
Well, you know, he's employed by the university, and the university makes hundreds of millions of dollars in the vaccine business, and so using their poster child, Richard Pan, to get him elected in office so that he can pass laws that enrich their budget. Sounds like a smart business
sounds like
matter
a plan.
For the university. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah,
yeah, that's why the governor
that sounds like a good
plan.
Yeah. Well, okay. So now, did you do anything besides volunteer in this capacity? Did you have a job?
No, I'm a permanently disabled adult, and so I like to keep as busy as I can in my free time, and so those are the kinds of things that I would used to do before I got this vaccine back in June of this year.
Oh, I see. Okay, so then do proceed. Let us know what is Guillain-Barré in reality?
Well, my understanding of it is the insulating coating that covers your nerve fibers. With the Guillain-Barré, it attacks that coating and basically destroys it. And so what happens when you lose that coating is your brain is not able to send efficient messages to your muscles to operate.
So did you lost the use of which muscles? Was it your legs, your arms, which muscles?
Oh, I was completely paralyzed from head to toe.
Really?
Yeah, it even affected my eyes.
And when you're talking about it as if it's in the past, have you been able to improve at all?
Slowly but surely, day by day, I make slow progress, and I make some gains. So some things have improved for me already. Like I no longer have the double vision. Now I just have like blurry vision. So that's an improvement.
Okay. Yeah, true. And is there any kind of exercise they make you do with your eyes that has helped you, or is it just time? What are you doing to help yourself, and what are keeping with you to do to improve your condition?
Well, I see all kinds of different therapists, all kinds of different therapy. And so I have all kinds of different little exercises and things I do. I have caregivers that work with me to help me do the exercises. I did suffer some brain damage as well from the Guillain-Barré, and so I really require an awful lot of assistance at this point in my life. Whereas before the shot, I was a completely independent person. And now I'm a completely dependent person. I got to have someone look out for me 24/7 now.
When I was briefly disabled, it was just 8 months, strangely enough, the thing I resented most of all was having to say thank you so many times a day for things that I could normally do for myself. So I didn't resent the people who were helping me. I just resented the fact that I was constantly thanking people for things I formerly so easily was able to achieve myself. What kind of really irks you that people might not expect irks you?
Okay, that's a great one. Because of the Guillain-Barré, it affects your fingertips and toes kind of a lot more than other parts of you as far as different kind of sensations. And so one of the things I can't do anymore is I can't, excuse me a second. I can no longer tear open packages. I can't open and close Ziploc bags. The ability to pinch and feel with your fingertips from the Guillain-Barré is basically destroyed. So even though I have fingers and I can touch my fingers to my thumb, I don't have any ability to have any, like, pinching or grabbing or any of that kind of stuff. It's real frustrating. You can't open a package of ketchup. You can't rip open a bag of chips. You can't all those things that, you know, even a little tiny toddler can do for themselves that I've taken for granted my entire lifetime are huge challenges now. And I think all the things that irks me the most are the things that I've just always done without a second thought that now are huge, tremendous challenges where I have to ask for help.
Right, and it sounds like you have to ask for help for almost everything. The people who help you, are family or are they paid people?
Well, unfortunately, out here in California, the in-home support services system is woefully inadequate. And so from the time you apply to the program, and get processed through, it could be 4 or 5 months. So if you do have any workers, they have to go that entire time without a single paycheck. And so to try to get workers is almost impossible that would meet the what the program actually delivers. I'm real fortunate. I have a lot of people that care about me, and so I have lots of friends that are fulfilling that role as far as the support network and caregivers and all of that.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm really happy to hear that. So you're surrounded by people that you're happy to see, basically. So that's
pretty good. I spent a lifetime of doing good in the community, and it's coming back to me.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. My mother has round-the-clock care. She was taken down by a pneumonia vaccine. She had a stroke after a pneumonia vaccine. And, you know, she requires round-the-clock care. And it's, you know, it's hard for her, and it's hard for everybody else, too. So this one shot can really, and unfortunately, nobody can understand anything she says. It's that, I think, might be the most frustrating thing for her is not her disability, but her lack of people understanding her. So I'm glad that you are breathing because, quite frankly, Guillain-Barré can result in a breathing mechanism as well. You know, it depends where it affects, but I do know a circumstance of a child who has got on a breathing, something that looked she requires this to breathe.
Yeah, a ventilator.
Yeah, something that makes her lungs go in and out, you know?
Yeah. I had that problem for the first 3 weeks of the Guillain-Barré.
Mm-hmm.
Where half of my face was completely paralyzed, so So I would try to talk to people, but nobody could understand anything I was saying. They'd just try talking with only half of your mouth moving. Guess it doesn't work too well. But anyways, I had that like for about three weeks before I was able to talk a lot better to where people could understand me again.
Well, you're really understandable now. I mean, you're clear as bell now. And, well, that's good because it is a great frustration for her who nobody can understand. And sometimes, you know, I just say I do just so that she's not frustrated in the fact because she understands what she's trying to say, but we cannot understand what she's saying. Yeah, really difficult.
Yeah, that's
just
an
added difficulty. Yeah, well, we're talking about everything that you don't have. See how it's ridiculous for me to say, see how lucky you are. You can breathe and people can understand you. But short of that, it's about nothing you can do. So that's really terrible. So how do you get transported when you go to a therapist, for example? Who takes care of that, and how are you mobilized?
I'm pretty much mostly in a wheelchair for any of that kind of stuff. Around the house a little bit, I can use a walker. I had grab bars put in all over my house, so... Mm-hmm. That plus I have caregivers that basically follow me around and basically catch me, well, not catch me, but bounce me back up if I start to teeter-totter one way or the other too much.
Right.
One of the other things that this jambore really messes with is equilibrium. For some reason, my equilibrium is just different than it ever was before this shock.
How about your appetite? How has that been affected, or have you changed your diet?
Something else that's really horrible about the Guillain-Barré is for about the first 7 weeks, the only taste sensation I could experience was saltiness. So everything was salty. I couldn't taste any of the other tastes. They were all off. So imagine that torture.
So were you thirsty all the time as a result?
No, just water tasted horribly salty, so it was difficult to drink. Just made it real difficult to eat or drink, and so as a result of the Guillain-Barré, I only eat and drink half as much as what I did before.
So your extremities don't feel well, and yet you can use a walker assisted, you know, use a walker. So that's pretty impressive, I have to say. The fact that you can walk even though your equilibrium is off, that you actually can put one foot in front of the other, you know?
Yeah, that's the miracle part, because at the same time I'm able to do that, my toes and my feet are, depending on the temperature range, I have a real narrow range of temperature I can operate most efficiently in. And other than that, my hands or my fingers and toes and feet, everything go icy cold numb. And so my temperature range is like between 72 and 76 is about the only temperature range I can manage. Other than that, I'm either too hot or too cold. I mean, really overheated or really frozen. It's the strangest thing.
Yeah, it is very strange. I have to say, I haven't heard that yet. Tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, is that what TDAP stands for?
I believe so, yeah.
Diphtheria and pertussis. Have you looked into the typical adverse reactions to this vaccine or to those vaccines independently?
Not before the shot. I mean, you know.
No, I know that. Right.
Since then, have I looked at all that stuff? Yeah, I have, and I'm quite shocked. Shocked and appalled and dismayed that there's so much toxic ingredients in vaccines and just how much reactions there are when you go to the doctor or you go any place to get a vaccine. The last thing they're telling you about are those possibilities. Pretty much
right,
everywhere
because
you
they
go
don't
now,
have liability. Informed consent does not exist. I don't know anybody who was informed about the adverse reactions that were possible before their child was given a vaccine. Not one person. So informed consent does not exist.
I don't even think the doctors are fully informed on all the adverse reactions of vaccines, because if they were, a larger percentage of them would refuse them themselves. That I know for a fact from going back and forth to the hospital and for therapy as often as I do. The surprising number of people every year that are working in the hospital that refuse the vaccines because they know of these adverse reaction possibilities. Once people know about it, they're not getting vaccines anymore, and they're not letting anyone they care about get vaccines anymore. And in the wintertime,
they're still giving them.
Yeah, their job. That's what they got to do.
Well, I just want to say that I saw an article fly by on Facebook, and it really hit me between the eyes. It said that I know that the rate of exemptions in California is around 2%, but the rate for pediatricians' children is 13%. So of that 2%, 13% of that 2% are pediatricians' children. 13% of pediatricians have exemptions. What does this tell us? This tells us that they know what's going on and that they are inoculating children regardless. So it's not even an experiment to them. They see the adverse reactions walk right back through their doors. You know, so this is really, this is the kind of thing that the Nuremberg Code was created for. All the people who knew what they were doing were hung. They were hung because they knew what they were doing. They did the wrong thing knowingly. And this is,
well, that's what's happening in our current medical system, Sally, is doctors aren't even practicing medicine anymore because everyone's scared of malpractice. They have a computer program that the pharmaceutical industry designs that tells a doctor if a person presents themselves with these symptoms and they're this age and they're this weight and they're this height, this is a list of drugs and vaccines that is recommended. And if the doctor doesn't follow that protocol, their malpractice rates go up. So they're in a position where they're forced to do something they know better, but financially they're being punished for not. So the whole system is just corrupt all the way around, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And everybody in the system is compromised by it, you know? Not just the people working in it, but the people they serve especially. Take you, for example. Now, why did you get that vaccine? What possessed you to get that vaccine?
Well, to be honest with you, I was at my annual physical checkup and having a discussion with my doctor about getting a chickenpox vaccine because I suffer from that shingles outbreak every year. And it's something that my insurance does not cover. And it's a $330 out-of-pocket cost for that vaccine. And so while we were having that conversation, he mentioned that I'm overdue for my tetanus and my pertussis. So, you know, would I like to get my shots knocked
it's
out of the way.
It's not your tetanus, and it's not your pertussis, and you're not overdue. You were never due for that, you know? Come on, you're overdue
well,
for
the system that the, you know, that the healthcare companies, the Kaisers and the Sutters and the UC system, they all have this computer program that tells them this is what you need. And so the doctor says this is what you need. And I've been around doctors my entire life, and, you know, I have always trusted that they know what you need. And this was the first time I really got an eye-opening awakening that even the doctors are deceived when it comes to the vaccine.
Well, they're certainly not taught in school. They're just taught the vaccine schedule, basically, how to coerce parents into accepting vaccines for their children. And I've even heard how to deny vaccine reactions are a reaction to vaccines. In fact, there's a nursing student who was dropped from her nursing school for saying, why should we deceive the patient? And they basically kicked her out of school, and she's suing to get back in. But that was a legitimate question, our patients, you know?
Well, I'm just grateful that a really good neurosurgeon happened to wander by the ICU ward when I was in there declining and recognized my symptoms and did the appropriate test to confirm her suspicions, and I was accurately diagnosed with this and given the proper medication to stop the damage from further messing me up. So
right.
I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, the neurosurgeon seemed to be the one speaking out about this. In fact, Dr. Tenpenny recommends that you never see a general practitioner, be it a pediatrician or a doctor, general practitioner for an adult, simply because their job is to vaccinate you. That is their job. So she said, see a specialist. Don't see a general practitioner. And I thought that was good advice.
Yeah, except the way all the insurance companies out here in California work, you have to go to the general practitioner to coordinate all your specialists. And so you can't go and see any of those without seeing your general guy first.
I see. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well,
yeah.
Does the general practitioner who injected you with this vaccine and recommended it, does he know the outcome that you have suffered, and what has his reaction been, if so?
I've never seen anyone feel so bad as the doctor that gave me that shot.
Did he report it to VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Because if you were to try to get reimbursed for your disability, it's important that he report it to VAERS.
I believe the neurosurgeon did all of that initially, because she was the one that told everybody that this was from the vaccination that I just received.
So, well, for example,
because they ruled out that it could have been caused by anything else other than the vaccine.
Well, the reason I bring this up is because they always turn to the VAERS system to see what the reactions are to the vaccine. And I was speaking to a woman whose child suffered tremendously from the meningitis vaccine, and the nurse had said hundreds of children had come in that weekend to the emergency room, all in terrible shape, and what they all had in common was the meningitis vaccine. But when she looked it up on the child's record, there was no mention of the cause of this, and yet hundreds of children, hundreds of them went unreported. So it's really hard to establish the true danger of these vaccines unless the doctors do their job. which is to report it. And also you yourself can report it to VAERS if you decide to do that. But it is, they are supposed to, is my point. And, you know, so that we can prove what the reality of the damage that these vaccines are causing.
Well, I can tell you from being on the Facebook group with the other Guillain-Barré survivors that that the statistics being reported are not reflective of the statistics of the actual survivors in the different groups. Our experiences and numbers don't match up the official reported numbers at all.
Same thing with the HPV vaccine and the flu shot, you name it. On the whole, the vast majority of these adverse reactions are not being reported by the doctors as they should be. The only time I know of a doctor reporting something is when a little boy of 3 died from a flu mist. And basically, in his reporting that to VAERS, which everyone was so grateful for, even though he administered the lethal dose, they nonetheless were grateful because that meant the parents would not be going to jail for shaken baby syndrome. So it was a way, in his doing that, he protected the parents from that accusation. But the fact of the matter is, he dealt the lethal dose, you know? That's the bottom line.
Yeah, and the cocktail that the newborns are being faced with today versus 10 or 15, 20 years ago is just unimaginable.
Yeah, right. Now, you had a Tdap has tetanus in it. Do you find yourself, I've heard that eczema is resulting, which would be the least of your problems, but nonetheless, are you experiencing eczema as well as total bodily paralysis?
No, nothing like that.
Okay,
just lots of
you can...
nerve damage is basically nerve damage and loss of muscle. I lost like 30 pounds of muscle in like one weekend.
Whoa, are you kidding?
No, they weighed me. I got weighed at my physical, and then I got weighed when I was at the hospital, and somehow 30 pounds just evaporated, and basically I lost all the, you know, all my muscles were just gone.
Would you have any idea how that happens? Have you researched it enough to understand how that happens?
I've been researching away, and I don't have a clue. I can't find anything about it, really.
Huh. Because, obviously, muscle is the, I guess maybe bones might weigh a lot, but muscle seems to weigh the most of any. And you can tell. You can tell that your muscles are dissipated.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once they're gone, I can no longer hold my upper body upright anymore. And I fatigue out so quickly and easily, and I have to take long naps to recover from small amounts of, exertion.
I did physical
therapy today for an hour, and I ended up having to take a 4-hour nap to recover from the hour of therapy.
Well, I was hoping that you'd be able to challenge Pan in his next election and take his seat and serve in his place. I guess you're not feeling up to that.
My health is nowhere to the level of being able to carry out the duties of a California senator, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I can't even manage my own personal anything at this point. It's an interesting thought, though.
Have you found, it seems that people have stepped up and stepped in and want to help you. Have you found yourself rejected by other people who find that you're not interesting to run and have fun with anymore, therefore you're rejected?
Yeah, I would say that's happened. I'm not really focusing on it, so it's not really bothering me, because I got so many people that are coming out of the woodworks to help me out. So I'm just really blessed and fortunate that there's so many people that have goodwill in their hearts.
Well, what message would you like to send to Richard Pant, your former, the person that you volunteered for? For what, 7 years?
Yeah, about that, approximately.
Well, what message do you have for him?
Well, Richard, I'm the living proof that your vaccines are not as harmless as you purport that they are, and the dangers of those vaccines that you are now subjecting all children in California to is going to cause damage, and you are responsible for the lives that are going to be permanently affected by this law that you crafted. And I really feel sorry for your soul, buddy.
Well, if we ever do overturn this ruling wherein everybody is protected, from the drug companies to the healthcare workers, I hope that they are charged in arrears, you know, for the damage. But I have to tell you, when people talk about 3 to 3.5 billion dollars having been spent through the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Board, that's for all vaccines since this law has taken place. Wait till you hear what was paid out in the 1970s, in 1970s dollars, just for the flu shot. Are you ready? Just for the flu shot in 1970s dollars, $8 billion were spent compensating people for the damage from the flu shot in the 70s. And
wow,
since this law passed, only $3.5 billion has been paid. I have to tell you, I've interviewed 300 parents of vaccine-injured children. Only two of them have gotten compensation, and it has been a pittance.
Yeah, my understanding is the only ones getting compensated are the attorneys who do the vaccine cases. They get up to $500 an hour, whether they win or lose, by the federal government. So there's no incentive for them to win or get any kind of substantial awards for victims. So the federal government has that whole system gained from the outset.
Have you tried to get compensation for your injuries?
Right now, I am just trying to gather as much information so I can make some well-informed decisions. But I haven't done anything
there
at this point.
There is a specific time. They give you a window of opportunity, I think, per vaccine. I'm not sure. But you want to know what your limits are for when you can apply for compensation. Everything is timed. Your reaction to the vaccine, there's a certain window of opportunity that has to fall into. And then you have to request money, and there's a certain window of opportunity that must fall into. So there are so many ways in which you will not succeed unless you understand what the rules and regulations are to succeed.
Yeah, and who's out there and teaching or informing anybody about that, because you're the first I've ever heard mention anything about it.
Right. Well, I would definitely go to the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Board, find out their website, find out what they will reimburse you for, because there are certain vaccines that there's nothing they'll reimburse you for, and then others, there are things they will reimburse you for. You have to have been afflicted as a result of the vaccine there are all kinds of rules and regulations. So I would go to their website and find out what those rules and regulations are so that you can be compensated. Does your insurance cover currently the help that you require or the supplements you might require that would be non-allopathic?
No, it's not covering any of that.
Right. Well, this is the kind of thing that I can't guarantee you that if you do get an award, it will cover it, because I understand that the majority, if not all the money that is spent, can only be spent to go back into the medical industry. So if you're not spending it to directly back into their pocket, you may not be able to spend it. You may have an award that can't be spent the way you need it spent, like on your mortgage, you know.
Yeah.
I even heard that they would only allow a wheelchair for a child when he was 3, and they applied for one when he got older, and they said, well, you already got one. Yeah, but that was a wheelchair for a 3-year-old, you know. So
right.
This is a very tricky thing. There's a fellow that did get compensated, wrote a book, and it was in regard to autism, but I'm sure there's a lot you could learn about in that book from him. So I will find out the name of the book and at least recommend, you know, give you the name of it. I don't have it at my fingertips.
Fantastic. Thank you.
I think it's called The Autism War or The Autism Wars. But, yeah, he's the one of the two. And the other one that just spent years, you may not be able to fight this fight. It is literally a fight. And then to get the money that you're awarded is yet another fight, a dribble at a time. But at least you know what you're up against.
Yeah, well, the only thing I'm concerned with right now is trying to get as much of my independence back as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be back to me as quickly
as
I can. That's all that matters.
Well, I certainly hope that you seek the proper help. I'll let you know that Dr. Crowley reverses vaccine-induced diseases. I don't know what her track record is with Guillain-Barré, but I do know her. She's got a good track record with autism. And this is what she does. She reverses vaccine-induced diseases. So that's something you might want to check out, too.
Okay.
So... I'm sorry for this really horrible setback in your life, but it certainly has brought out the best in people who surround you, hasn't it?
It certainly has, and I had no idea that there's that many people around that actually, frankly, even cared. But now I know it's just a tremendous blessing.
Well, say your name again.
John Bertelli.
John Bertelli. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we depart? We get cut off unceremoniously in about a minute, and I say unceremoniously because I don't get a countdown. So take a minute and speak from the heart.
Parents, before you get that vaccination, read the information that comes with it and ask questions, and don't combine shots whatever you do. If you have to get them, at least get them separately and with time in between.
Good enough. I just tell people stay away from hospitals, doctors, schools, and the military. Don't go anywhere near any of these people, and you will not get vaccinated. It's just a matter of steering clear of a needle, you know? All right.
Yeah.
Lovely speaking with you. Thank you very much for being my guest today, and I'm honored to know you.
Well, thank you, Sally, and I appreciate the good work that you're doing of sharing the information. This is very important information, and